This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Anita Rao, in for Frank Stacio. If a friend owes you money, do you follow up with them or do you let it slide? Would you pay your romantic partner to do the dishes? Or how about asking your coworker just how much money they make? Conversations around money are important, but they're also one of the most uncomfortable topics to broach. A new podcast from Marketplace explores conversations around cash and the many unexpected ways money affects our relationships and even our identities. The podcast is called This Is Uncomfortable, and it's hosted by former WUNC Fletcher Education Fellow Rima Crace. Rima joins me now. Rima, welcome back to The State of Things.
Hey, Anita, how are you?
I am good. So why were you interested in exploring this theme?
Yeah, for all the reasons you said, it's very uncomfortable, and so we should probably talk about it because we don't enough. And yeah, just to give you all a little context, like you said, I'm a reporter for Marketplace. I've been here for 2 years now, and I spent a lot of time covering economics and business and how money impacts people's lives. And then I realized that, like, even though I was reporting all this, like, I hadn't really thought deeply about my own relationship with money. There's this one moment I remember. So my roommate and I, we had lived together for 3 years, and I realized I'd never even broached the conversation with her. Like, we'd never talked about how much we made or whether we were saving for retirement. And I remember one moment when we were signing up to, we were like signing a lease, and we had to like put down how much each person makes. I think we had to put down how much we had in our savings account. And I remember like sort of peeking at her form. And that was the first time I like really got at any glimpse of like how much my friends make or how much they have. And that was like the first moment where I was like, oh, my God, am I doing something wrong? Am I handling my finances the wrong way? Because it was more than I had. And so that was sort of like one of the, I guess, like instigating moments where I realized that I wanted to explore this topic because it's not something that I necessarily talk about with my friends.
Well, Rima, you're not very good at talking about it, and we are going to explore just how much it makes you uncomfortable, which is a little snippet from the very first episode. So let's take a quick listen.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I think you owe me money.
Oh, do I?
The other day, I called up my friend and brought up something I'd been putting off. But I don't know. I was going to ask you about it a while back, and then I forgot, and then I didn't actually forget. I lent her some cash while we were traveling back in December. It was a busy trip, and we just never sorted it out. Of all my friends, she is someone who'd pay me back right away, so it shouldn't be a big deal, just a silly oversight. But bringing up money, even in a context like this, is really hard for me. I mean, you can hear it in my voice. Do you owe me money? But maybe you paid me, and I just don't remember.
What?
Remember when the painting and like the keychains and stuff?
Yes, I remember this.
I hope I'm not wrong though.
That's a clip from the new podcast, This Is Uncomfortable from Marketplace. I'm with podcast host Rima Crace, who is also a former WUNC Fletcher Education Fellow. So Rima, you're very good at talking about money for your job, but not so good at talking about it with your friends. You're clearly having a hard time.
Yeah, that's a very real conversation. Like, even last week, I was arranging a bachelorette party, and I feel like this is a very common experience, and I was, like, getting the Airbnb, and we all had to, like, split it, and long story short, someone owed me, like, $250, which is, like, a very, like, I should feel comfortable asking her, but, like, I literally was, like, consulting two of my friends on how to, like, structure the text or how to approach her about it because she had just lost her job and I didn't want to put like this unnecessary pressure on her. So it's like it's a very tricky topic. And I think like, you know, like one of the reasons I wanted to do a podcast that explores it is because, you know, I think there's a tendency to be polite and diplomatic when it comes to certain topics around money and jobs. Like, obviously, I feel like that. But it's at the heart of like so many decisions that we make, right? Like it influences the jobs we take on or where we live or even like the communities we create or even like how we see ourselves. And so I think, you know, I'm saying this for myself. I think the more we talk about it, the more likely we are to take, you know, make smarter and more thoughtful decisions. You know, like, for example, it can be weird to like tell a coworker how much you make, but odds are it can probably help them, especially if they're a woman.
Yeah.
Or person of color.
For pay equity. So in your first episode, you look at how money can factor into a relationship. And you look in particular at the story of one couple, Nika and Terrence. Can you tell us about them and set up kind of the role money plays as the third wheel in their relationship.
Yeah. Neek and Terrence are great. So they are this couple that we feature in the first episode, and they're and we follow them and take a look at how money unfolds throughout their relationship and becomes, as you said, like a third wheel. So they come from pretty different backgrounds. Neeka is, and the reason I chose to talk with them is because I think they represent a lot of, they're emblematic of a lot of couples. But Neeka, she comes from a lower socioeconomic background. She is the first, I believe, in her family to go to college. She had to take out a bunch of loans, whereas her partner, Terrence, he grew up in an upper middle class family. He did not have to take out student loans. And, you know, straight out of college, he got a condo, thanks to his parents' credit. And so, he bought a condo. So very different financial situations. And that's part of the reason why I wanted to talk with them to see, like, how money comes up. Because, like I said, that's a very common dynamic. And, like, even in their first date, it comes up. You know, they choose to go out to this expensive place. It's like Topgolf, which I've never been. But, you know, Neeka was telling me how, like, it can cost, like, $200. And so she starts to feel, like, pretty insecure in that moment and, feels a certain pressure to also pay and to show that she has money, but also she's wondering in her head, like, what expectations does he have for this date and for, if he feels comfortable throwing down this much money.
So there's and all so, kinds of signaling going yeah. on at the beginning of their relationship. She's trying to read how much money he makes by the date that he chooses. Mm-hmm. He's kind of trying to read her response to the various choices. And then it kind of all comes to a head at one point for Neeka when she realizes that they're both talking about being broke and that term means something very different to the both of them. So let's take a quick listen to a clip from that episode.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't even going to be able to go home for Christmas that year. I was, like, watching what I eat. I was not buying anything new. You know, I'm feeling very, very broke. And Terrence would kind of joke about, man, but I'm broke right now. And I was like, sir, you have thousands of dollars in the bank. I get that you want to adopt the broke mindset, but when I say broke, we don't mean the same thing.
Terrence, he's got savings in the bank. He's got money coming in from renting his condo.
My level of broke was I may not be able to go with my classmates who decided they wanted to do a 3-day weekend in Argentina and quote unquote ball out with my friends.
I was like, oh, okay, all right. My broke is $30 in the bank and, you know, I've got to fill up my tank and figure out food until I get this next paycheck.
That's a clip from the new podcast, This is Uncomfortable, from Marketplace. I'm with podcast host Rima Crace, who's also the former WNC Education Fletcher Fellow. So much going on in their mm-hmm. relationship. There's money and gender. There's this question of income and wealth. The two of them both went to business school. They seem kind of similarly structured on the surface, but underneath, one of them has tens of thousands of dollars in student loan debt, and the other one has family inheritance that helps him buy a condo. So talk about mm-hmm. exploring that difference and what their story brought up for you.
Yeah, I mean, that was a great summary. I love that clip that you just played because I think it's a good example of how we can seemingly go through similar experiences or think that we are, but have completely different realities and conceptions of what's going on. I think a lot of our conceptions of money are obviously informed by our experiences, but, we also inherit a lot of our thoughts by our families and parents based on how much they saved or didn't save money. And thinking about that clip that you just played, I don't think I mentioned this in the story, but I think one survey showed that, like, you know, people considered having, like, I think $900 available to them in cash or bank account to be, like, quote unquote broke, which is really interesting to me. Like, I think if you ask, like, any five people on the street, they'll have different conceptions of it. And that was and I think, like Neeka said, it's easy to sort of adopt the broke mindset. And so that was just an interesting conversation. And I think one of the first times I even thought about it that deeply.
What the term means and how it can impact how other people read what we're saying. And I'm curious, too, because when we think about entering into a relationship, money can represent so much more than just the cash in our bank account, right? It can signal to people kind of the place that we're coming from, the intentions we have, maybe the values that we have. And I think every couple finds a different way to approach money, and especially at the beginning, how to approach money so that it doesn't kind of take on more significance in the relationship than it needs to. The two of them come to a really interesting conclusion about how to navigate money in their relationship. Talk about their approach and maybe what we can learn from it.
Yeah. So, yeah, y'all should listen to the episode. But at some point, like, they sit down. They have what they call, actually, I don't remember if they have a name for it, but essentially they have like date nights where they just sit down and talk very openly about their finances, and they make it into a thing. Like, they'll play music, they'll light a candle, they'll sit at the couch, and they'll literally just like open up their computers and go through their budgets and on like a Friday or Saturday night. And they're really intentional about it. And, you know, when they approach it, you know, Nika's like, I don't make as much money as you. You make a lot more. So, like, we have to come up with a situation in which, like, it still feels fair, like, so that you're not holding all the power in the relationship. And it does, like, at one point, she does end up feeling like the power is, you know, leans more towards him, because once they figure out this, like, despite, you know, spending all these hours figuring out their budgets and coming up with the solution, there's a point where he starts making a lot of the calls, right? Like, he wants to go out. You know, he tells Nika, we don't have enough money to go out for dinner tonight, but then he'll make the financial decision to, like, go out and watch the movie, like, go to the movies by himself. And then she's like, you know, well, last week you said we didn't have enough money to go to the movies. And so, you know, I don't even know who's right or wrong in this situation. It's just a matter of, like, how you approach a relationship and, you know, what you decide as fair. And for them, it did not feel fair, even though Terrence had most of the money. This is before they're even married, for him to make financial decisions without her. And so they end up, you know, Terrence ends up making this huge financial gesture where he is like, okay, you know, just so, you know that I'm being fair, I want to start contributing to your loans. And this is also, like, another interesting dynamic, right? Like, obviously, like, we can have, like, another conversation just about the gender dynamics here, because, you know, what it means for a man to pay off a woman's loans. And, you know, that is obviously a thought that goes through Nika's head, and she feels a bit of shame around it, or just like guilt, because she had always thought of herself as this strong, independent woman. And, you know, what does it mean now that a man is paying off her debt? And so that's sort of like an internal conflict that she goes through, which, you know, I just think this episode brings up a lot of it just brings up a lot of themes and things that we even encounter in our relationships and friendships when it comes to money. And yeah, it was really great being able to share those through them.
Let's move on to another episode that you did about, I think you called it homework, and it's about hidden labor and this idea that there are things that we do in our families and in our relationships that are labor, but they're not paid. Some people may think of this as emotional labor, hidden labor, non-monetarily valued labor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about your own family's story and your exploration of the unpaid labor that you did in your own family growing up?
Yeah. So, yeah, even though this is a podcast about money, like, we want to be a little bit loose with it and, like, think about all the other ways in which we, you know, think about all the things that money stands for. And some of that includes, like, power and opportunity and ideas of class. And so, like, another way that we're thinking about it is, like, conceptually too. And so thinking about emotional labor, it can be hard to define, but basically, you know, it's the labor we do on a day-to-day basis that is unpaid or may go unrecognized. It's kind of invisible. And so in my own family, I talk about the labor that I did as a child growing up and as a teenager, helping my dad, who is an immigrant from Palestine, you know, helping him essentially be like the family's translator, which is, I think, a role that a lot of kids of immigrants take on. And so I specifically hone in on the relationship that we have. And, you know, throughout my childhood, I helped him, like, draft emails and fix his punctuation. And, like, you know, we would sit down at his office and just, like, literally spend, like, hours sometimes on drafting an email for work or to a neighbor or for, like, soccer parents. And, you know, I talk a lot about how this is, like, a role that I took on in my family, but that didn't really make sense of until actually I worked on this podcast, because it was just something that was baked into, you know, my life and my responsibilities at home.
How did your parents respond to you calling this labor?
Yeah. You know, I think my dad was a little confused at first, to be honest, because, and, you know, he was like, oh, you want to talk about how you just like help me write emails? And I was like, yeah. I think like initially he was a little taken aback. And then when he listened to it, he really appreciated it. And I think it was just a different way of thinking about the roles that we take on in our families. Because I talk about how, you know, I think, like I said, a lot of times kids of immigrants play this role, whether it's like the translator or whether it's like helping their parents navigate a system that feels confusing or foreign, and helping, you know, I talk in the episode about how like in helping my dad in this way, and I didn't realize this until I talked with him, I think, you know, it felt like this annoying chore growing up, but really it was a way to help him feel a little bit more American, and to help, you know, help with the assimilation.
I wanted to talk a little bit before we close about the sound of the show. And it struck me right away from the beginning that it sounds very millennial. You sound very free, very open in the way that you're talking with your friends, the vocabulary that you use, the tone and the sound of your voice. Can you talk about what it's been like to create a show and really own your millennial voice and what kind of response you've gotten to that?
Yeah, that's so real. And I think I'm glad that you picked up on that, because that is definitely what we want, what we're aiming for. You know, we want a show that really reflects the kinds of experiences and conversations that we have, right? Like, I'm sure you've had those conversations too, like just whether it's at home hanging out with your friends or at a restaurant and you're trying to figure out how to split the bill and it becomes awkward, or even, you know, when a coworker pulls you aside and is like, okay, let's talk about our salaries, like how much are you making? You know, I want to, as much as I can, replicate those conversations and those moments and share them very openly. And, you know, just to be clear, like, you know, we're talking about money, but this is like the last thing I want this podcast to be is a personal finance podcast, even though there's a ton of value in that, in talking about 401ks or how to invest in the stock market or whatever. But that's not what this podcast is about. It's really an opportunity to look at the emotional side of money and how it makes us feel and act, like this thing that dictates so much of our lives that we don't talk about necessarily. So, yeah, I definitely want it to reflect the experiences of people my age. And like I said, everything that comes with money, too. So, like, I want to explore our relationship to work or to ideas of class and status and power. And again, like, even more conceptual ideas like unpaid labor.
Have there been any subtle changes that you've noticed in your own behaviors around money since you started the podcast?
That's a good question. I want to be like, yeah, I'm a new person. No, I'm the same. I think if anything, I make pretty poor financial decisions, like, and my dad would attest to that. Actually, at the beginning of this podcast, I sat down with him and I was like, how much do you think I should have saved, Baba, as like a 26-year-old? At the time, I think I was 26. Or no, I was 27, but whatever. And he was like, you should have $100,000 saved, which is crazy. And I don't know how he came up with that number. I barely have a fraction of that. Anyway, so I think if anything, it just has made me more conscious of how money has come up. Like if I feel awkward about it or if I how it comes up with my friends and family. But I think it'll take a while before I actually change, probably.
There must be something about immigrant fathers and $100,000, because I think my dad has said the exact same thing to
really?
Me. Yes.
It's wild. It's like, what world do you live in? Like, how am I supposed to have saved that much money? But yeah, it's endearing. Maybe one day.
Maybe one day. Plenty to talk about. Everyone go check out This is Uncomfortable from Marketplace, hosted by Rima Crace. Rima, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Anita.
You can find links to the podcast at our website, stateofthings.org.